The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview recorded as part of our MagQuest series at MagFest 10, the Music and Gaming Festival, in National Harbor, Maryland. Enjoy. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakmas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Benjamin Price.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Alright, continuing our MagQuest series at the Music and Gaming Festival, welcome to the show, James Portnow and Daniel Floyd from Extra Credits.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How are you doing, guys? How are you enjoying MagFest?
We've loved MagFest.
It's been a fantastic show. Exhausting, but fantastic.
Yes, this has been our first one, and we absolutely want to come back. We've thoroughly enjoyed this.
Fantastic. Could you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do?
Do you want to go first?
All right, sure. All right, we create a show on Penny Arcade TV called Extra Credits. It runs weekly on Wednesdays, and we spend about 6 to 8 minutes, roughly, talking about game design, the video game industry, just video games as a medium, what can be done to make them better.
And just so you guys can differentiate, that was Daniel Floyd, and this is James Portnow.
Yes.
and yeah, do we want to keep going? Do you want any information about us personally, or just keep going? Whatever
you feel is necessary.
Okay. I sort of created the show, just unintentionally, back at school. Professionally, I'm an animator at Pixar Canada, and so I do extra credits on the side.
Professionally, I'm a game designer. I run a consulting firm out of Seattle called Rainmaker Games. I also hold a professorship down at DigiPen, and I do a lot of talking on how we can push the medium forward and on games and education at universities around the world. Dan brought me on board after I had long been desiring to talk to the consumer rather than just talk to other designers, and Dan had the perfect format for it, so that's how this got started.
And we also have a third member of the team who's not with us, who is named Allison Theus, who is currently doing all the art for all of our episodes, who is fantastic as well.
And she's down working on the Warhammer 40K MMO.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So how did you two meet and work together?
I started the show. It wasn't even a show then. It was just like a presentation for a class when I was studying at SCAD. And I made a second one just because it was fun. And I ended up quoting... From an article that James had written a lot. And after I'd finished it, I ended up emailing him asking like how to pronounce his name just to make sure I'd gotten it right and just send him the link.
And when he did that, I was interested. So I was like, sure, when it's done, send me the whole thing. And he did. And it was exactly what I was looking for, because for months by that point, I had been looking for a way to communicate with people who actually buy games, because I had written in a lot of industry-facing publications, Gamma Sutra, Edge, all these sort of things. And that was really talking to designers, but I realized that no one was going to let me make better games until the consumer demanded better games. So we amongst ourselves have to elevate the level of dialogue. And when I saw what Dan did, I remember I was sitting at my desk at Activision, I was watching through this video, and just like my jaw dropped, because I was there. That was it, right? That was how you get people interested in the depth that games can have.
So, James, how long have you been working in the games industry?
Math in my head at 1 a.m. about 7 years.
Okay. I don't know if you're allowed to discuss it. Can you mention some games that you've worked on?
Sure. I mean, as a consultant, most of the things we do, we are perpetually NDA'd on and can't talk about, but... I mean, I've worked on everything from the Call of Duty series to Farmville.
Okay. Now, Daniel, you narrate the episodes as well, correct?
That's correct. I do.
James, have there ever been any episodes that you have narrated yourself?
The only case where I did that was on the games addiction episode, and that was because I didn't know how to tell it through the extra credits format. And so I got on camera and just talked about my own experiences. But otherwise, no, I'm very happy leaving the narration to this man's expertise.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So extra credits covers a wide range of topics, everything from cutscenes to how to get into the game industry, from games as art to games as propaganda. Does it ever concern you that so few average gamers are interested in having, you know, intellectual or critical discussions about gaming?
Well, so when we first did this, I was curious to see how many people would care. And I wasn't sure. I didn't think it was going to be anything, right? But we weren't going to let fear stop us, right? We were going to take the shot. And I've been shocked at the response, actually. The number of people who are willing to engage in dialogue, who are hungry for this type of knowledge, because the industry doesn't communicate well with the consumer, has impressed me to no end. I mean, the community has time and again surprised me with their interest and engagement on things that may seem otherwise dry.
Yeah. I think the content and the topics that you're discussing are excellent. And the problem with trying to start a dialogue, especially through the internet, is that more often than not, the negative or inflammatory comments sort of drown out the positive or intelligent ones.
One of the things I've really wanted for this show, since we made it actually a show and not just me like kind of screwing around making little projects for school, has been like, I want to maintain a somewhat optimistic just kind of attitude with it. Because it's very easy to find negativity on the internet, especially when just about anything that internet people are enthusiastic about or have a strong opinion of. And I've been rather surprised at how infectious that seems to be, or with people at least who are like who follow our show and are interested in the sort of things we're talking about. That optimism seems to kind of catch on. And like a lot of people have, like, even just here at MAGFest, have like come up and thanked us specifically for that facet of the show, like for how positive we are and like how, or at least how constructive we attempt to be. So while obviously negativity is always going to be a loud voice on the internet, because it's very easy to find people who hate things on the internet, I'm hoping that some of that optimism will rub off a little bit. And I think it has begun to on some, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, it's refreshing for a change to see something that's not just a rant.
Totally.
I was wondering about the games as propaganda episode you did, because that was a recent one. I was actually just watching it a little earlier. Did that particular episode cause a lot of arguments or a lot of, I don't know, unforeseen reactions from people?
So, the Call of Juarez one or the one right before that?
The one right before that, the actual propaganda ones about the Japanese whaling one, and particularly the America's Army one.
So, I mean, you might know more, but interestingly enough to me, I mean, that one came out of a lecture series that I do. Because as I said, I tour around a lot and lecture at universities and also to game companies. And some of the stiffest resistance I've met to the idea of games as propaganda has actually come from other designers.
Really?
Yeah, who don't want to believe that this medium can have a social effect, because if we accept that this medium has a social impact, then we have to accept some responsibility and think about the content that we put into our games.
So what are some games that you think have some really strong or positive messages that we can actually take away from, that we can actually learn from?
Well, I mean, I think that there are a number of games. I mean, there's a number of skills that and outlooks that every game teaches you, right? Agency. I taught very briefly at a sort of inner city school, and I found that the kids didn't have a sense of agency. They believed that life was just something that happened. I mean, they wouldn't verbalize it in exactly that sense, but pregnancy or getting shot on the street or whether or not you went to college were just things that worked out, right? And I was able to work with some of them to understand this concept that my I do control my own destiny, my own life. Through the very clear call and response that games give us of, I do an action, I see the results fail, I try again and change the action I do, And in doing a new action, I get new results, right? So, I mean, that's one of those basic things that every game teaches us. And so I think you can look all across the board. If you want specific examples of games that do positive things, I mean, you can look everywhere from Portal, which can teach us a great deal in terms of logical thinking, mm-hmm. and lateral thinking for that matter, to any of the Total War series or the historical games made by Paradox. Those are incredible teaching tools about those historical periods. Even things like MMOs can teach us discipline, right? So it's all about what you get out of your games. And for a lot of us, I mean, the ideas that we get to explore in RPGs, be it Mass Effect or Final Fantasy, really can cause those moments of introspection. We have all had artistic moments, revelatory moments from games. So I think the spectrum is fairly broad.
Are you a fan of Tim Schafer's games? Those are really, I think, pinnacles of bordering, creative design.
Yeah, bordering fanboy in my case.
Yeah. yes. I'm going to go with a yes.
Good answer. Good answer. I was watching another recent episode that was about the Singularity and Technobabble. I actually really enjoyed those, sort of the more broader sci-fi sort of discussions. And it got me thinking about a book I read a little while ago for class, which was Jaron Lanier's You Are Not a Gadget. Have you guys read that book?
I have not read that one. Would you recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it. It's really talking about the singularity and about the future of how technology and the human mind intersect. The title really says the message that you are not a gadget, that our brain and just our very humanness works in ways that computers cannot replicate. And he talks about everything from internet culture to why, you know, open source can be a bad thing, to a concept that he talks about called lock-in, how designs get locked in. The example that he uses is MIDI. Mm-hmm. Like, MIDI didn't have to become the standard for programming music, but it did. It got locked in, even though MIDI has a lot of limitations and a lot of faults. So that's a book I would definitely recommend. Jaron Lanier is, like, freaking genius.
And actually, I believe on some of the lectures I've heard from the Singularity Institute, now that you mention it, it's late, I have heard them recommend it as well, so it's going to go on my Amazon list.
Yeah, that was actually for class. Reading, but I'm glad they made me read that book. I mean, not that it was a chore, it was a great book. So another question: do you think that the future of gaming is moving away from consoles? Because there are some signs with mobile gaming, with maybe with cloud gaming, that might be the case, and with sort of the rise of casual gaming. Or do you think consoles are always going to have a place in video games?
I've got a ton to say on this, but I've been hogging the mic. Dan, you want to jump in?
That's exactly why you should keep talking. We did an episode on this already, and he wrote it, so.
So, in my opinion, I mean, it's unpopular to say, but I believe from an industry perspective, it's becoming more and more clear that having a lump of plastic on your desk is, much less three, not necessarily the future, right? And you look at a lot of these companies, and EA is really the canary in the coal mine. They've been floundering for the last couple of years looking for a answer to how they're going to adjust to this. Origin just being the most recent, they're looking to create a digital download service to eliminate that physical product. But, I mean, their acquisition of Big Fish and PopCap, right? They've been looking to build out social games. They've been trying out MMOs. They've been sort of flopping all over looking for what happens when like with the collapse of Blockbuster, what happens when GameStop collapses, when that no longer makes sense as a business model. And to me, I y'all excuse my vulgarity, but we are getting our asses handed to us by social and mobile games, because and EA is another great example. I mean, they have not had many profitable quarters in the last many years, And it's because you take a $60 million bet on a game, and a lot of games don't recoup that at all, and a lot of games make a small margin on that. Whereas you take something like Angry Birds, and I mean, that's a $1 billion franchise that was made in a month, right, by a couple of guys.
Yeah.
You take Minecraft, right? You take even Farmville was made in a month. And these are the profit margins on them are just so incredibly high compared to those on AAA games that we are looking for some way to be competitive. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think that we're going to lose. I see many people think of the demise of the console as demise of the type of games they like. I don't think that's actually true. Okay? I think there's always a place for those type of games. I just am not sure that it will be on a disc, on a thing, on your table next to your TV.
Yeah, and of course, there's been a lot of backlash from so-called hardcore gamers against so-called casual gamers, but of course, you guys had an episode about just about the use of the word gamer. And do you think that this is something that we should be trying to move away from, this distinction?
All right, I'll jump in again. So as a medium, it's very strange, this term gamer, because you think about reading or watching television or listening to music. We make this tacit assumption that everyone we run into, at least in a first world society, has seen a movie or watched TV or read a book. And yet we have a different term which separates people who have played games from those who have not. That is going to come to an end within the next 15, 20 years, right? Generationally, we are seeing at this point young kids, grade school age kids, you have about the same percentage that have played a game sometime in the last week as watch TV sometime in the last week. So that's going to change. In the meantime, we also have it do double duty to talk about a subculture, right? Here we are at MAGFest. MAGFest is a great example of both the best and the worst of that subculture, right? And I mean, I think there are lots of things worthy of preserving, and lots of people are worried about, as you mentioned, this backlash is actually, to me, this concern that this subculture was a safe place for many of us who had no other safe places in the world. And now all these other people, when your jocks and your mom can play games, wait, they're not allowed in our world. That wasn't what's supposed to be here. And so you get this backlash. But I think that's got to go too. I mean, I think that's one of the sides of gamer culture that we've got to abandon, because one of the things that's great about gamer culture is on the other side, we've always been embracing. I mean, you look here and you look at the number of people who are in some ways either disabled or otherwise have things which may keep them on the outside from standard American society, and yet they've been fully embraced by this community. So there are some great things too. But I think the term gamer is not the right term, because in the larger view, it's not about those great things, right? It's about being your Cheetos eating basement dwelling troglodyte, right? And that's something we've got to get past.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's just sort of the eventual fate of most subcultures, is eventually they get absorbed into the mainstream and they're not subcultures anymore. It happened with
Punk rock,
with, I mean, you name it.
Beat. Got it. Yeah, we can go on and on. Grunge. We can go through the list.
Yeah. We won't, though. That's fine.
Yeah, I think that's good.
One question about this. I was curious. You guys used to be on The Escapist, but now you're on Penny Arcade. What prompted the move to Penny Arcade?
This is something that we can't actually talk about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So you're here at MAGFest, and you said this was your first year
that it
ever
is.
Coming here yet. How does MAGFest compare to other conventions that you've gone to?
I've enjoyed it in that I don't know if this is just a result of the scale or of the just the kind of design of the show behind it, but this has felt a lot more relaxed to me. Like, I love going to PAX, and it's really the only other like con I've gone to, and I plan to keep going to it. But something about this one is, it's just much, I guess it really is just the size. It's much more casual, and at any time I can feel like, oh wow, there's like a band playing, like I should go right now. I don't have to, and I don't have to stand in a line. I don't have to, like, it's kind of casual, and I've enjoyed that very much. I've gotten to meet up with a lot of people I knew online only, and I'm finally like getting to meet them in person for the first time, and I've very much enjoyed myself here.
It's great. I mean, helps that this venue is like three times the size of.
Yeah, I hear it was quite crowded.
Yeah.
Before.
I just have a quick question. Do you guys make it out to many conventions on the East Coast? Because before we started the interview, you guys said that you're actually heading back on your flights back to the West. You're going to Seattle and you're going to Vancouver. So yeah. Do you guys make it out to the East Coast very often, or do you find it limiting because, you know, coast to coast travel is never
easy. James seems to make it most places. Like I am limited in the fact he is his own boss, which helps. I work for a company and for a studio, and so basically any one of these things I go to are basically me using vacation days, right? So I'm kind of limited in what I can do. I would like love to make it out to PAX East, and I might still, but like
you will.
All right, I'm probably we'll see, but yeah, like I have to be very like pick and choose which ones I end up coming to.
For me, I mean, I travel more than I would like. This last month has been, last 6 weeks have been Austin, Boston, San Francisco, Buenos Aires, Boston, San Francisco again, and then out here, right? I do the convention circuit, but mostly I go to industry-facing conventions, and unfortunately most of those are on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely plan to attend PAX East, but there isn't too much out here other than Games for Change, which I think actually the venue got moved on Games for Change this year. So it's pretty much just PAX East as far as conventions go.
Okay. I'm curious, what brought you out to Buenos Aires?
If you Google video games Argentina or video games Brazil, my discussions are the first things that come up, because unfortunately no one's looking at the emerging markets, at least in South America. And I believe there's a very, very... there's a lot of growth potential in the South American markets, and a lot of interesting things that are happening because they're sort of growing up independent of the major publisher scene that we see here, Europe and Japan. But more than that, I do a lot of consulting down there for talking about education, because how you can use games to kickstart the technology sector, and how you can use games to get kids interested in technology. And to be honest, Brazil more than Argentina, but Brazil's a decade ahead of us in terms of using games to educate.
Really?
Yeah, they've got, unfortunately, their educational system is arguably on the verge of collapse. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but their baby boom was much more recent than ours. So right now, if you take that portion of the generation, about a third of the population is high school to early college age, right? And in a lot of places, the public schools simply can't handle the numbers. And so even if you fail, they just move you on to the next year. Mm-hmm. And so they're desperately looking for ways to augment the abilities of their teachers, right? Allow one teacher to handle more students. And one great way to do that is provide the students with games which are inherently interactive, which they can learn from, and have the student teacher walk around and work with teams. And so they're a lot further in that direction than we are. Although on the other hand, the president's call and Valve's response this year to me speaks volumes of this shift in attitude in the United States towards an interest in integrating games in education.
So does that mean there are a lot of kids in Brazil playing Oregon Trail and Math Blaster?
They have much more updated versions. Tragically, with the death of Broderbund came the death of actual educational games that were truly engaging. But down in Brazil, there's very little money for entertainment games because a lot of complicated things with taxes and piracy and a lot of other stuff that's totally not worth you guys' time.
Gotcha.
But since there isn't that money for entertainment games, all the people who want to be making entertainment games are actually making educational games. So you get a much better set of educational games.
Interesting. Well, that's all the questions I have. Ben and Sean, if you have any questions, feel free to ask.
No, I don't think I have anything. I think everything pretty much has been covered as far as my questions.
All right. Well, are there any, before we wrap up, are there any upcoming projects, announcement, things you guys would like to plug on the show?
It's a good question. Just, I would ask people to watch, if you get the chance and get the time, tune into Extra Credits over the next couple of weeks because I don't know when this is actually going to go live. But I think we have some fairly important things coming up that I would honestly like people to see. I would appreciate people tuning in.
Definitely. Unusual sort of for us, but definitely important. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Daniel, James, thank you for joining us. Thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.